But first,
T.C. Boyle. He recently released his 18th novel, Talk to Me. It's about a juvenile chimp named Sam that's learning to speak via sign language. In Talk to Me, T.C. explores provocative questions about animal consciousness, like, what if we could speak to another species in the same way that we speak to each other? What could we learn about other animals, and what could we learn about ourselves? This isn't the first time that T.C. has written about a lab chimp learning sign language. In 1979, he wrote a short story called Descent of Man about a chimpanzee named Conrad. He joins us now to share how he'd answered some of those questions, how he went about writing for another species, and why, all these years later, he wanted to revisit one of his earliest short stories.
The story was a very short, absurdist piece. The Paris Review published it, which was huge for me. I was just a kid starting out. And it was a love triangle. The first line of it is, I was living with a woman who suddenly began to stink. Well, why does she stink? This is what the reader wants to know. And she stinks because she's spending a lot of time grooming this chimp in the lab where she works. Meanwhile, she is living with a man who is a kind of a schlump, and he's kind of puzzled as to what's going on. And she is falling for the chimp who is far more charismatic than this man. Okay, so it's a very absurdist, wild story. But I followed this subject over the many years. And now for my 29th book, I return to it. But there is certainly humor in my portrayal of Sam, the chimp at the center of this book. Also, there's a great deal of tragedy, too, in the book. And it is not absurdist. It is sticking to what actually happened in some of these experiments. And I'm using for my texts the wonderful books like Nim Chimpsky by Elizabeth Hess, or Next of Kin by Roger Fouts, which is about Washoe. I was able to get all the details I needed from these and other books about these experiments, in which a chimp was raised from birth in a human household as a human child, not having any contact with its own species, so that we could gauge how language acquisition occurs and also teach the chimps to speak our language in the hope of communicating with them in a deeper way than, let's say, we communicate with our dog. You know, are you hungry? Okay, roll over. Good boy. Something that would go a little deeper. I think the hope was not necessarily a Dr. Doolittle kind of thing, but if the chimp could learn our language in the way that a 3.5-year-old child does, and this is the intelligence level of a chimp, that perhaps it could communicate something to us about the mystery of this life on this planet and who we are and why we are and what it means to be alive. But of course, the experiments began to peter out. I mean, they're still going on, but the main focus of the book and of these experiments was in the 70s and into the 80s. There are limits, of course. We didn't teach ourselves chimp language, which is a gestural language, or we did to a degree, but we couldn't communicate with them and with any depth, nor could they communicate with us with any great depth in the way that you and I are communicating right now. It just is cross species. It just doesn't work. The chimps have their own language, a gestural language. It's gotten them this far in evolution, and they would be perfectly fine if it weren't for this other great ape that came along and destroyed their environment and put them in cages and made them learn sign language.
Yeah, very well said. Some of the most compelling chapters are written from the point of view of Sam, the juvenile chimp. How did you go about channeling your inner chimpanzee to write these chapters?
I'm just projecting as I would with any character to inhabit anybody, anytime, anywhere, and make it credible. So there is always a trick to it, but it's the same trick as there is to any fiction. The reader has to enter it and believe that this is credible and see the point of view. That's the beauty of fiction, to create different points of view so that everyone can experience something outside of him or herself. And so in this case, I was doing the same thing. But you'll see that the words that I emphasize are capitalized in the text. These are the words that he knows very well. And this is how he is trying to adjust to this world. But meanwhile, the narrator stands back and says, well, this is a term he didn't know, but he wanted to know it. And we get his emotions and we also get his perspective. It was a challenge and it was a delight for me to write these chapters.
Yeah, and they're a delight, although that's kind of the wrong word to use because they portray so much of the harrowing backstory of Sam.
It does. It is. The tragedy of these experiments was that the chimp, which can live to be 50 years old, and again, is as smart as a human child of 3.5 years old. And by the way, we have a 2-year-old running around this house learning language, and it is frightening how smart he is. So you can imagine. Then these animals, once they become adolescents, have to be removed. All the chimps you see in TV and movies and so on, they're all juveniles because a chimp has twice the power of any human being, and it is a dangerous wild animal. We forget, we anthropomorphize them, but in fact, our dogs and cats, think about it, they've been bred for thousands of generations, and mostly the bad actors have been eliminated genetically. But with the chimps, they are wild animals straight out of the jungle. Now, of course, they're coming from a breeding lab, but their parents came straight out of the jungle. They have not been acculturated to human beings. They're powerful. They're angry. They have their own point of view. They don't want to be in a cage. They don't want to be taught sign language all day long.
No, of course not. You raised so many questions about animal consciousness and talked to me, and I'd like to ask you about a few of them. First up, I'd like to ask you, do you believe that animals are self-aware?
I don't think so. I don't think that they're self-aware in the way that we are, where we can name ourselves. As we talked earlier in this conversation, we have language, we can name ourselves, we can look at the past, we can look at history, we can look into the future. Certainly they are engines of their minds and their instincts. I don't know if they're exactly the machines that philosophers have made them out to be. They certainly have free agency, but I don't think they can foresee consequences of an act in the way that we can. On the other hand, I see that a lot of our behavior is mandated by our animal being. We think that we have free will and make free choices, but one could argue that it's all pre-programmed, just as it's programmed in the spring for the birds to come back to Wisconsin and find a mate and build a nest. Well, we do the same thing. We try to deny it, but I think it is true. So much of what we are is controlled hormonally. And also, we are built to reproduce the species. That's what life is. The only purpose of life is to make more life. And we can rationalize it all we want, but a large part of what we are seems to be rather mechanistic too.
This is a hypothetical question, so I don't know how you'll feel about answering it. I guess we'll find out now. If and when we are able to really communicate with animals on a more advanced level, what kinds of questions would you be most interested in asking them?
I think it's the very questions that biologists ask today. How do they do what they do? I think we will never get to a why. You know, we all feel so insignificant in the face of the life force and the face of the universe and just the sheer numbers of exoplanets. And obviously chances are there's a lot of life in the universe and it's going to be very diverse and the consciousnesses are going to be very diverse. I mean, just look at life on Earth, how it has evolved in thousands and thousands of countless species. Imagine if the conditions were different, if instead of an atmosphere of oxygen and CO2, the atmosphere was methane and creatures evolved to thrive in that atmosphere. What would we find? What would it be? And further, what is the value of the human consciousness? I often wonder about this. Evolution doesn't progress, it just happens. And so we all assume that we've progressed beyond the other apes to this brilliant status and so on, and that this is positive. But in fact, maybe all we needed was to survive in tribes and had enough brain power to bring down our prey and feed ourselves. Beyond that, look what we have wrought. What we have wrought is complete destruction on all the other species and soon a suicidal destruction of ourselves. Maybe our brains are an evolutionary backwater. Mm-hmm. Maybe the chimps left alone in the jungle would be far better off than we in our towers.
Would there be a particular question that you would be most afraid of the animals asking you?
Yeah, why do you eat us?
Great answer.
I am fascinated by everything biological. I think if it weren't for math and science, I would have been perfectly happy as a field biologist. I observe closely. Mm-hmm. I love to be in nature, as I said earlier. I love to observe it. I'm living here in Santa Barbara, and we've got about an acre and a half of woods. I leave it for the animals. There's no pesticides. There's no nothing. I dug a pond for them. Everything is fine. So I can go outside here without having to go to the mountain. The mountain's right there where it's wild. But even right here, every day there's something new. There's some new creatures. New things are happening here. There are possums live here. Raccoons live here. What are they doing at night? What are they? What are their habits? This is fascinating. As far as what they're thinking, I don't know if they're thinking. I think their intelligence is focused on getting food.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And reproducing, of course.
Yes, yes. Much like Homo sapiens. Yeah, exactly.
Although we've put other layers on it, and I don't want to come off as a misanthrope, although maybe I am. We are quite beautiful in having devised our culture and being able to have conversations like this.
Mm. Well, yes, definitely. And on behalf of all readers everywhere, I want to thank you for not becoming a field biologist, because we'd miss out on all your great fiction, all your great novels and short stories. So no, that I really mean that. It seems to me that with your novels, well, with your short stories too, but I want to focus on your novels. It seems to me that you're always trying to do something different in each of your novels. So assuming I'm right about that, what were you trying to do differently in Talk to Me?
Yes, I am always looking for new approaches in stories and novels. I feel that I don't want to be predictable. I mean, maybe thematically, you know what my themes are, and I'm always recycling them and rethinking them. But each book seems, and story too, seems to have its own way of wanting to be told. For instance, The Terranauts of a couple of years ago, which is about the experiments in the Arizona desert with the biosphere. Could we live in an enclosed environment that's self-replicating? In that novel, there are three narrators who alternate, and they're all first-person narrators, which is something that you don't normally see in a novel, because if you're in the mind of one first, I did this, I did that, and suddenly you're in the mind of the other. But still, it worked. It worked for me. I just never done it before. In this one, of course, I want to know about animal consciousness, and so I have Sam narrating chapters. In the previous book, Outside Looking In, I wanted to wonder about human consciousness, and particularly the issue of God. Is there God? Because so many LSD trippers felt that they'd had a religious experience. And then that raised the question of, well, is God some outside entity, or is it simply a miswiring or misfiring of the neurons? In any case, in that one of the attractions for me was to reproduce a couple of acid trips. Could I do that? You know, and it's always a little sketchy, because if somebody says, man, I had a great dream last night, let me tell you my dream. What could be more boring? Or let me tell you about my trip. And so I had to set it as a challenge for myself. If I don't, you know, I would go to sleep. I don't like genre writing, because it's the same thing over and over. I want to be surprised. I want to surprise myself, and I want to surprise you.
Yes, and you do that all the time. T.C. Boyle, thank you very much. It's always so much fun to talk to you. Congratulations on Talk to Me and on being the effervescent and entertaining and enlightening T.C. Boyle.
Thank you so much.
T.C. Boyle is the author of the novel Talk to Me. Find out more about T.C. and Talk to Me at wpr.org/beta.
Poetry is a language that can speak of things that we can't hear, see, or know, or sometimes even feel yet.
Coming up, Joy Harjo, Poet Laureate of the United States, on her life and her poetry. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.